The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
What was that?
Beyond.
I try to spice it up. You guys just shout at each other. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 471. I'm Max Scoville. I'm joined by Brian Altano. Andrew Goldfarb.
My first time doing this in studio. I don't know where to look. I'm very nervous.
It's okay. It's just fine. Do the same thing we used to do. It's just a more expensive table, probably.
Yeah. It has fingerprints on it, though.
Yeah. It's real slimy.
Stop
and
it.
Marty Sleeper.
Stop it. Hi.
What do you think of the table? How are your fingerprints doing?
I think it's great.
Cool.
I think it's the best table I've ever seen.
So you guys,
wrong with Christ you? Could have eaten at this table.
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about this week?
Yes. You guys went to PSX in Anaheim. You were there all weekend. You got to see a lot of cool stuff. I was on the live pre and post show with Alana talking about all the stuff that they revealed in the Sony keynote. Let's get started with something that really is probably the longest awaited thing here. You reviewed The Last Guardian.
Yeah. I did. Last Guardian is out. It's in your hands by now if you want to play it. I did review it. You can check out my review on the site. I gave it a 7.0, which translates to good.
Does it feel sort of like a huge weight is lifted off of the entire video game industry right now?
Between that and Final Fantasy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really kind of nice that back-to-back we have those two games that people have been thinking about for, what, cumulatively like 17 years?
Yeah.
And they're out now, and they're reviewed, and people like them. It's kind of a good feeling.
Yeah, so I mean, we won't go into spoilers. I think we're going to record an actual one-off spoiler cast where we just take the gloves off and actually talk about the story and the ending and what we like and didn't like. But I think the game is oftentimes gorgeous and stunning and has moments that I'm absolutely never going to forget. I think when Trico works as an AI, it's the most playful, lifelike AI maybe I've ever seen in a game in terms of like an animal. It does really feel like having a pet. But I sort of said when it works because a lot of times the game's ambition, I feel like, is a little too steep. And I feel like visually the game feels like a 2016 game, but mechanically and camera-wise, a lot of times it does feel like a game that was in development for the last better part of a decade.
Yeah, yeah, I'll totally concur with all that. Yeah. I just finished it yesterday, and I read your review. I think it's completely spot on. And it's a tough one to write, right?
Yeah.
Like it's actually in terms of video games I've played that I've felt this sort of bipolar on, I can't remember one that I've had equally so many wonderful, incredible moments coupled with so many moments of frustration. I found myself probably in awe and like kind of giggling at how great the bond between the two main characters are, as often as I find myself cursing at my television and frustrated at the camera, the controls. Like, there's a lot of things, and it really sucks because this is it. The game's done. A lot of people were tweeting at me being like, think they'll patch it? I'm like, no, I doubt it. Like, maybe.
There's a day one patch, but I don't see, like, a month from now.
I played it on my PS4 Pro, which is apparently the best place to play it.
Yeah.
But you have to go into the settings and set it to 1080p mode to keep it pretty much locked at 30 frames per second, which is the best you're going to get. If you're playing on a regular base PS4, which I imagine most of you will, you're actually going to get a lot of times in that game where it drops down into single digit.
Yeah, like, and it's especially in the first quarter of the game.
Yeah.
There were times where, like, noticeable frame rate dips. But then, which is weird because the back half of the game, I think, is the set pieces are bigger and the settings, I think, look look better than the start of the game, and the frame rate was fine there.
I was going to ask you about that because it almost felt like it was something my mind was making up, but I felt like halfway through that game, like it was like I put a new graphics card in my PC.
Yeah.
Like that, the second half of that game is noticeably better than the first.
It reminds me, not in terms of content, this isn't a spoiler or anything like that, but it reminded me of how in Bioshock Infinite, when near the end you go to Rapture, and then there's this sort of this thing with the lighthouses, and that looks like we got to that part and we're like, oh, this looks way better than anything I've seen before. And it just feels like this was the stuff that was made in the last year or two as opposed to, you know, the early stuff, which we, I mean, to their credit, like the stuff we saw running on PS3 seven, 8 years ago, those scenes are still in the game.
Yeah.
Which
is
crazy.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, it's worth noting that they probably had to pretty much rebuild it from the ground up to get it on PS4.
Yeah.
Like it's easy to look at it and be like, oh, this is a last gen game. Why isn't it running perfectly and flawlessly on current generation? Because it's like, you know, drastically different architecture. Like they were probably bashing their heads against the, you know, the cell processor stuff from the PS3. I saw something online about how like the dev kits for PS3s were like a server rack. And a PS4 is just like a gaming rig, basically.
Yeah. Oh, weird.
So, I mean, you never really know what you're going to get with that.
And also, like, the game barely has any load times. Like, if you load in and don't die, like, you can go hours without the game loading, so which is sort of incredible when you think of how vast the spaces are.
I don't know if they're pulling, like, a Metroid Prime where they're hiding it behind,
they
like,
might.
Certain things.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
Or, like, you go into a tight hallway and the rest of the world disappears as it's being, like, reloaded in.
It's such a weird game to talk about because I am trying to focus as much on the positive stuff in it that I genuinely, truly did like. I really think that like the bond between Trico and the boy is like one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in a video game. There are moments where you're like, I'm watching like a 1990s Japanese animated movie.
Oh, totally. It feels like Studio Ghibli, honestly.
Like it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Watching like environmentally, I will say that like it's sort of repetitive in terms of like you see a lot of the same textures, you see a lot of the same like it's mostly
there are rooms that are actually the same.
Yeah.
Like literally the same physical layout, the same banisters up top.
Which is odd, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how they're sort of justifying that narratively, but the way the actual bird dog looks, which I like towards the end, I started to realize is more of like a bird cat.
Oh, it's absolutely more of a bird cat. Yeah. Doesn't roll off the tongue as well.
Yeah. He's just so incredible. And like when you get into a conflict with enemies that throw spears at him and the boy climbs onto him and starts yanking them out, like there's this like tangible feeling of pain. Like my wife walked in the room and saw me playing one of those scenes and heard the bird dog like yelping where there's like blood patching up on him. And she was like, oh my God, is he okay?
Yeah.
Like, and she's not connected to the game. She didn't play it for 14 hours like I did. But, there's something noticeable about like the pain that he feels. And there's a lot of moments in that game where the two of them are there for each other. And it's this unlikely bond. And I don't think that they have a motivation in the story besides to just be friends, which is kind of cool. Like at no point was I like, oh, we're going to save the, I was like, I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know where we're going or why we're going there, but like, it's
together.
Kind of nice, but we're together.
I've never been so kind of just ambivalent about whether or not I want to play a game. I mean, I'm definitely going to give it a shot. I'm sort of dreading it, but I feel like because I'm going in with almost negative expectations, I might come away incredibly surprised by all the good stuff. But yeah, I mean, it sucks that, you know, it's a game that does push back by accident. You know, it's not like a game like Bloodborne or something where the difficulty is part of the gameplay. It's difficult because the dog doesn't do what you tell him to,
or
because the camera's weird or the frame rate dips.
Well, and there's a certain amount of the dog not doing what you tell him to that I think is cute and kind of works as a character. But then there's other times, I mean, Andrew saw me playing in the demo room and there's this puzzle where I had to get on his back and then he had to dive underwater and go through this little gate. And he was doing it and failing for better part of a half an hour. And then arbitrarily one time he did it and succeeded.
So what's
interesting is the problem is like when you've solved the puzzle, you know what you have to do. You have completed everything that you're doing and you're just fighting against the controls. Yeah. Like that's a problem.
So you told me all about that scene and I went and dreading it and actually finished it on the first try. Got super lucky with it, which I think it's like your experience may vary. But then 5 minutes later, I was in a different scenario. I actually found myself not really struggling with Trico's commands or getting him to be where I want him to be. My main problem with that game is the boy interacts with Trico as if Trico has his own sort of gravitational pull. Like I was describing him as like a Super Mario Galaxy level where like you would go to jump off of the top of him and swing around and end up on
his
belly.
I mean, you're in his grundle.
And I was like, get me out of the taint.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be in the taint right now. I want to be on the ledge.
Brian Altano 2016.
Yeah. The last grundling.
But it's like, There's so much there that's amazing and beautiful and worth playing through. And I really think like the last two or three hours of the game were just a spectacle. Yep. Like there's nothing, there's no video game experience like this ever made. There never will be again.
Yep.
There is no, there's, it's not like you play a Call of Duty game. You're like, this is a first person shooter. It's a really good one, but someone's going to make a better one one day. No one will ever make another game like this. This is just a one of a kind thing.
And the last.
Yeah, it is The Last Guardian. And I mean, I don't know what it, I think the people who worked on this game are to get split up into 17 different Japanese Sony studios, and they'll never get together to make another project like
I
this.
I think
again.
They need a hot license like Clifford the Big Red Dog.
That would be really good. I was saying,
would
I
you
want,
get him that point, Saint?
Yeah, I would get him that point, Saint.
Yeah, they never go into whether or not they neutered that giant dog.
They had to, or he would have been doing
what
red
else,
rockets.
What
everywhere.
Is he going to be making like love with?
Actually, does he have a red rocket?
Like a house?
I don't know. I mean, everything's red on him, so yeah.
So maybe he has just a regular like dog colored
rocket.
Yeah,
but like who's gonna like they need like a backhoe to neuter that dog.
Possibly.
Like, they'd have to go in there anyway.
But yeah, I think there's Marty and I, you and I were talking there was like a 3 hour chunk in the middle, 4 hour chunk in the middle that I feel like you could have lifted right out of this game. I, at no point did I was I like, this needs to be a 12 to 14 hour game or a 10. You know, I saw an achievement or a trophy pop up last night. That's an option. You can finish the game in under 5 hours. I don't know how people are going to do that. That's like expert speedrunner shit. Mm-hmm. But for me, it took like 11 hours for me to beat the game, which is kind of a long time to be spent.
Yeah.
Especially because you end up backtracking a lot towards the second half of it.
Yeah.
So, man, like what a weird game to recommend because I think that like on a control level and a camera level, it's really cumbersome and it's like it's really fails at what a lot of video games should be really good at, but everything else is so well done that I think you just have to experience it if you can. Like rent this game, buy this game, borrow it from a friend. I even watch a YouTube let's play, and like I don't really like saying that kind of thing, but I think it's worth seeing and worth playing.
Cool. Recommend. And of course check out Marty's review up on IGN.com.
Spoiler cast soon.
In other news, we got another look at Death Stranding at the VGXAs, whatever they're called, the Game Awards. This is, of course, Hideo Kojima's new game. This one has Guillermo del Toro's head and hands in it. He's not entirely in it. He's a character in it, but they did not scan his entire body. They just scanned parts of him. But then they did scan the entirety of Mads Mikkelsen, who you might know from Star Wars Rogue One or from
even that part
or from
even
Casino
the
Royale. I don't know if they scanned if Guillermo del Toro's bungus or anything. I don't know if they went down and
it was head, hands, and bungus.
We know this is running on the Decima engine, which is the same thing that Horizon Zero Dawn uses. Yep. Apparently Guerrilla Games basically just gave Kojima the source code before they'd even have any meetings, and like, we just kind of like
literally
take
they
it.
Presented him with a wooden box, and inside was a USB stick that had their source code, and that was their like do with it what you want.
That's
awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
And of course, the trailer itself is the level of complete nonsense you would expect from a Kojima game. Mm-hmm. Del Toro is going through a big, stinky, crab-filled kind of gulch, and he goes outside of a tunnel, and there's weird baby dolls floating around, and there's tanks going around covered in viscera and squid parts, and there's an upside-down rainbow and World War II planes with umbilical cords on them, and then inside the tunnel, the baby floats on down. You get some cool synthesized music, and there is Mads Mikkelsen with some tactical gear on, and he's got a bunch of World War II paratroopers who are skeletons attached to cords.
Yeah, and he's bleeding from like oil from his eyes.
And what? It's like so early that I wonder if, like, has this game even actually started? Like, are they now looking at these two trailers like, oh god, we have to fit these into a game somehow? What's happening?
I think
here?
They're like, let's make some short films.
Yeah,
and like, I don't know if there's a gameplay yet.
Like I can't like I. Love these trailers as like tone pieces and stuff, and the cast is obviously great with just those two guys alone. But like, man, like, is this a 2020 game? Like, what is this game? Like, they just picked this engine, so now they're gonna start production on this. Like, it just seems so insane.
I mean, because I could take a bunch of scenes from Metal Gear Solid 5 and cut them together to make this amazing tone piece, but like, that's a fraction of the joy I felt playing it.
Yeah.
Like, playing it was like the systems mechanically in that game. It's one of the most impressive games I've ever played.
Yeah.
So I just want to know where this is going.
That's the thing with Kojima is everyone's like, he should make movies. But I'm like, but also his games are mechanically incredible.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's not like
once he starts working on them.
Yeah. It's not like his games are QTEs.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to assume, given Horizon's engine, that this is going to be open world of some sorts. Yep. I don't think this is going to be linear corridors.
They've said that
pretty much.
It's open world. It's open-ish. It's going to be action-based. I think Kojima said something like this is based on his... You interviewed the guy.
I did interview
the guy. What did he say? What's this game about?
He was mostly talking about the engine. We really just wanted to focus on that. And then I did ask, I was like, hey, are there going to be any other... obviously, you have two AAA... you know, really well-known actors in this? Like, are you, do you think going forward you're going to be casting other well-known people? And he sort of skirted the question, but he said, there will be a female protagonist in the game as well.
Get out.
Yeah.
Okay.
A girl.
Beth Mikkelsen.
Nora Reedus. yeah, I mean, I just, I, cool trailer. The first one was cool. I really wish he would not talk about this game for 2 years. It's one of those like rare cases where I'm just like, I don't want to see more, or at least when I do see more, I want it to be a game. Because at this point, like nothing we've seen it has been created as part of the production of this game.
I'm totally with you, and I've said just as much on this show. That being said, I feel like this was a good sort of footnote to his achievement award that he received at the Video Game Awards, which was basically a make good for the fact that Konami robbed him of his own accolades a year before. So I think it was like, yeah, I don't want to see anything for a while. If he shows up to every award show or every event for the next 3 months and he's just like, guess who it is?
I mean, that's what, he was at E3 when they announced this. Yep. He was at TGS. Now he's at PSX. And so
yeah, I guess
he hasn't
missed
a show yet. Like, that's what I mean. Like, do we need to see him at PAX East showing off more? Like, it just, let it go. Like, he should skip next E3.
He's like, it's Jesse from Breaking Bad and he plays a skateboard. Yeah. I'm like, stop it.
Like, a year from now, I would love to check in and see where this game is. But I almost feel like at this point you're creating weird expectations about what this game is. I mean, it might look nothing like this.
So that's what I want to touch on, is that what's really excited about this is we have no idea what this game is about. We don't
know what he does.
I mean, maybe he doesn't. Maybe this is legitimate surrealism and he completely just taught, like, we are so used to games being like, oh, there's a hook, there's a twist, there's a thing that it is that you can define it by, but rarely do we get stuff that is just full-blown meaningless nonsense for the sake of it. Like, just, I mean, Mario is that, surrealism.
Yeah.
He jumps on mushrooms and he kills turtles and there's a dinosaur that takes a princess away. Why? Nobody ever asked that.
I assume they were making love.
Maybe. I mean, sure. But, like, you know, why is Del Toro
like
crabs?
We, in the Nintendo Switch trailer, we saw like a 4-second clip of what the new Mario game looks like running. And I'm like, okay, I understand how I'm going to play that game. Mm-hmm. It's a 3D Mario game. I don't know if it's open world like Mario 64 or if it's like level based like 3D world. With this one, I'm still just like, well, I know you made these character models, so I doubt it's a first person shooter. It's not a shmup. It's not a 2D beat 'em up. Maybe it is. Who knows?
I mean, it's not like the days when we would see like a Killzone trailer that looked incredible because Blur made it, and then the game looks nothing like that.
Right.
Like, Metal Gear 5 is probably the best indicator of what this game will probably be like. It'll come out on the PS5 in 2096, so it's, you know, probably going to look better than that. But I do think that like we have some expectation that it'll have a, whatever they're doing with it, it'll probably look at least as good as Horizon.
Okay, but I'm talking about just like subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is so completely just off the beaten path in terms of what we're used to. Like,
right.
With Metal Gear, that was the, I mean, we had Zone of the Enders, there was Snatcher, there was Police Knots, but as far as like stuff that Kojima's been doing for the last 20 years that we were trying to track what happens next, we've always had some kind of an idea of where things are going or where things are set.
Yeah, with Metal Gear, he's been coloring within the lines. He's been drawing whatever he wants inside them.
Yeah.
But you kind of know this is the franchise, right? This is what this is.
Sure.
It's going to be like a stealth action game. Open world was added to 5, which was really cool. With this one, I like those crabs could be your wives. And Matt Mikkelsen could be like your health bar. I don't know. He doesn't have rules anymore.
Yeah.
Right? He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome.
But I mean, the theories that people already have are nuts. There's thoughts that there's either time travel, this is purgatory, and everyone's just kind of stuck in limbo here.
Yeah.
Kojima himself has talked about umbilical cords. Apparently, I think it's a Kobo Abe play. I believe that's his name. A Japanese playwright who also wrote a play that involves a guy hiding in a box, which was the inspiration for Metal Gear. But he has some play where he talks about how the first thing that man invented was a stick, because that keeps things away from you.
Yeah.
But then the second thing they invented was a rope, and that brings things closer. And so he's like talking about umbilical cord, and it's like, okay, that's some
game about ropes.
That is some high concept, but also very simple stuff. People think it's the last baby on Earth. Humans are sapping Earth's resources, and all the crabs and whales are dead. I think maybe it's about trying to wed the ocean life, but I might be wrong about that. But that's my theory.
I really like the idea that Mads Mikkelsen's your health.
Yeah.
Also,
he bleeds, the more you're bleeding.
I think when I said PS5's gonna be out in 2096, that'd be like a 76 year run for that system.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, the consoles are actually getting a little longer each time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, the next firmware update is really just gonna be hardware releases.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
be like, great news. The PS 4.5.12179A. has been released in North America.
Your PSN.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I like the Last Baby on Earth, like Children of Men type of situation there. That could be interesting. I think what's going to really, like, what's going to make or break this game is how well it leans into absurdity, and if it just is complete nonsense. Like, I mean, did you guys play Evil Within? Mm-hmm. Like, that game was complete nonsense by the second half. And they were just like the characters at the end were like, oh, what do we think of that? And I was like, nothing. Like, it's garbage. It's nonsense. And I was actually kind of pissed off at it because I was like, okay, there were some genuinely creepy moments here. It's a survival horror game. But, like, Resident Evil ends and you're kind of like, well, they got out of the mansion and they stopped Wesker and the virus. Evil Within ended and I was like, I don't know what we just did, I hope that everyone's okay. So, I hope that this is like, I hope he can go nuts now that the gloves are off and he doesn't have anybody holding him back and Konami's not there, physically stopping him from entering the room like they in that Jeff Keighley Glixel piece, which you should all read. But I hope that there's like this is somewhat grounded in something that isn't just pure abstract art. Or not. Maybe that'll be fun. What do I know?
I'm very curious what the hell it is, and I'm excited to hear more. I don't care. I'll spin fan theories and just go through a trailer like frame by frame. Like that's one of those things where it's part of the game for me is just tracking it ahead of time.
Did you see the thing where somebody stacked both trailers on top of each other?
It's
so weird.
Yeah. So like we tried that 100 times this weekend. Like the one people are doing it with is like a cut version. Like and we put a video up where it's synced. Like, I felt like an insane person because using the official versions of both trailers, it didn't quite sync perfectly unless you delay one of them, but it's still really cool.
Well, I put Johnny Cash's Hurt to the Nintendo Switch trailer, that synced up perfectly.
Yep. Yeah.
That doesn't always
mean
anything.
Dark Side of the Moon goes perfect with Wizard of Oz if you're stoned.
Yeah.
Like, that's sometimes the only rules that need to be applied.
I swear to God, man, it works perfect. If it was intentional, if it is real, that's really cool, though. Because it does, like, when you sync them up right, it does look awesome seeing the baby just, like, flip over to the other side.
Yeah, love watching babies disappear. PSX was a thing, and there were some big, big announcements. We got Uncharted, The Lost Legacy. This is the standalone installment, which I believe is both digital and retail. Mm-hmm. It was
Were you guys playing the guessing game of like what franchise is this while that was happening?
We went the full gamut. We were like, it's Tomb Raider. No. Oh, Assassin's Creed. Oh, Prince of Persia. Oh, well, Infamous.
The weird thing was we had heard the night before The Last of Us 2 was going to get announced, so I was watching this entire trailer expecting it to be The Last of Us 2.
And
I was like, how does she have a cell phone? Like, did they rebuild society?
Showing things like being bombed out and blown up, I was like, this looks almost like too modern for Uncharted, but too crappy for Uncharted, but too good for The Last of Us. But I think once we saw, we were actually guessing Shadow of the Tomb Raider. That was ours too.
We went seriously, I think, through probably half a dozen at least games trying to guess.
Also checking Chloe and
Nadine. Yeah. Well, it's weird too because like Chloe, even seeing Chloe's face, like we haven't seen Chloe since Uncharted 3. So it's like, oh crap, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny to shout out the Tomb Raider too because I feel like if that name hadn't leaked, that never would have been a guess because that game's probably barely started, I would imagine.
I
think in terms of all the stories they could have told from the Uncharted universe, this is one of the most interesting ones.
Yeah.
I feel almost a little fatigued on all the characters from 4. I think even every character from 4 kind of overstayed their welcome by the end.
I think except Nadine, because honestly, that's why I'm excited that it's Nadine. Like, I didn't want Sam. I didn't really want Sam and Sully's swashbuckling adventures.
Because Sam's a liar. You already played through an entire part of Uncharted 4 that was not real.
Yeah.
Like, I would play through something in Uncharted, the DLC, where it's like, and then I won $1 million and made out with 100 beautiful
women. I don't know,
women.
That'd be kind of awesome.
No, you didn't.
Baron Munchausen, but
that's
it's
a
like
Nukem
a
game.
But I would love if going forward that before we get a proper Uncharted 5, if we do get every year and a half, Naughty Dog releases a short, like 5-hour standalone thing that does focus on maybe Nate's kid. Or
that sounds awesome.
They said it was longer than Left Behind DLC and shorter than the average Uncharted campaign. So I'm
smarter than the average bear.
Smarter than the average bear. Yeah. That puts it probably at around, I don't know, anywhere between like...
Probably like 6 hours.
You think so? Yeah. I would say like somewhere between 3 and 5. Because
that's about what Left Behind was.
Left Behind was actually like less than 2 hours.
I don't think that's true. Right. There's a bunch of combat. If you suck really at video games. By the combat and stuff. Ooh, or if you're playing on hard.
Oh, he got you back. You did a 1 and he did
back mode. Ooh, Ashley Johnson's going to kick my ass.
No, but like I actually thought Left Behind was like the perfect length because like the combat in it, like I almost wanted to be shorter with no combat because I'm a big pacifist dork who would always prefer that, but I do think that that was a good balance. Whereas like even Minerva's Den, which I love, is like 3 times longer than it needs to be.
Sure.
I mean, I think everything's longer than it should be.
I, for one, am excited about the new lock picking mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding. I'm really don't. I It's good. It'll be fine.
Also, it looks like it takes place in Syria, Pakistan, somewhere in the Middle East.
Something like that, yeah.
They also look like grown-up versions of the two main characters from Left Behind DLC, which is kind of freaky. Maybe it's just like they're...
Huh.
Well, people are saying she's wearing a variant on Riley's clothes in The Last of Us trailer, so it's actually interesting.
Yeah, Andrew, like, you spoiled that. We're not there yet.
I'm sorry. But it would be cool to see them, you know.
Okay, let's move on to the other Naughty Dog announcement that came out of PSX was, of course, The Last of Us Part 2, which some of us were speculating about, and some Naughty Dog devs actually kind of blurted out on a live stream at one point. This trailer shows off a nice rustic road sign with a big firefly graffiti on it. And then Ellie and Joel are hanging out in this nasty cabin. And Ellie's playing the guitar. She's got a tattoo.
She's bleeding all over the place.
That could be other people's blood, too.
I'm definitely glad it was more, because when they just showed the stop sign, I thought that was going to be the whole trailer at first.
Me too.
And then when it cuts to her, I was like, oh, that's awesome.
They did warn that this is still very early in development.
Yeah. And they said that this is, I think Troy said, this is a tone piece. This is not a scene from the game.
Yep. Yeah, this was actually apparently finished a while ago, too.
Yeah.
So
it syncs up perfectly with what was, I think, leaked concept art that they tried to play off like, oh no, it's one of one of our artists internally just made fun fan art of a thing that you're paid to draw of. Yeah, I photoshopped that to be a Lilith Fair Flyer. I need to find that. It's good. It's like, come see the Indigo Girls and Robin.
That's awesome.
But we got some other news and theories throughout the weekend. One is that they match up some of the road signs and that they think it takes place around Seattle, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. And then,
which is weird because
Days Gone takes place in Portland. Is that where?
Yeah, no, but also because Troy Baker played the main character in the last Infamous game, which took place in Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is another PlayStation Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, the TBCU. And then during a panel at PSX, Neil Druckmann was like, hey, we understand that a lot of people, us included, I feel like on the show, we're like, we don't need The Last of Us 2. Like, it ends on such a perfect note. And then he was like, trust us. Like, put your trust in us.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you've liked what we've done before, trust us that we're not trying to milk this. And I'm like, yeah. All right, you've earned my trust. Yeah. I totally got you.
No, they have the last second game they made was Uncharted 2, which was amazing. So
just don't make a Jack 2. I don't like that game.
Yeah, I boomeranged on this one because I was not we had kind of heard rumblings about this the night before. And I was kind of worried, like, I don't think we need this. Like, it feels like it sucks because this only really happens in video games. Like, you and I were talking about this, Marty, about how, like, they wouldn't make, like, Moby Dick 2 or, like, The Road 2.
Yeah.
Like, certain works of fiction are perfect standalone. And I think the ending of the first one, I won't spoil in case if you haven't played it, geez, man, get out there. But it was sort of morally ambiguous and dark, and it's about anti-heroes, and it's about, like, selfishness and greed over the good of the greater universe. And, like, these characters are flawed and miserable people, and there's something charming and endearing about leaving it on that kind of note.
Yeah.
And then picking it up again 5 years later, like, part of me is bummed out because we're not going to see the actual – maybe we will – the immediate fallout of, or the slow, eventual, gradual fallout of the realization from these characters of understanding the gravity of what they've actually done to each other. But also 5 years later, like, I want to kind of see, like, how just messed up these people are. Like, how many years in a row can you bash cauliflower people in the head with bricks before you lose your damn mind, especially when you're going through puberty? Yeah. Like, that's messed up. Yeah. There's a lot of tension.
I'm also like, they're great characters.
Yes.
I would so much rather see just new characters entirely in a different situation. Like, I don't know, jump around. Like, that's what I loved about
House of Pain.
The House of Pain cinematic universe.
I don't know, look at like 28 Days Later versus 28 Weeks Later.
Yep.
I think that's a perfect format of how to do a sequel in that universe.
It's a bad show, but like Fear the Walking Dead is like an example of it's just a different. Yeah, I mean, you guys have a conversation that went up, Marty and Brian from PSX, that I would recommend people watch because it's kind of going over all of this and just sort of like why it seemed like something we wouldn't want, but like I do trust them.
So I agree. Like I said before on the show, I wanted that same thing of like, what's going on in Europe? Let's just have a game that takes place in Europe. And then when we saw Ashley Johnson and then Troy Baker comes into the end, I'm like, oh, I miss these two.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Totally, yeah.
Did you guys watch their panel? Yeah. Like, it's really impressive, especially it's a good mix of A, realizing that I love these two together. They're just phenomenal. And they've both been in the studio before doing our shows here. Yeah. They're just great, wonderful people, incredibly talented. Two, the tech behind this game is incredible. Have you seen the mocap stuff they're doing?
Yeah.
Like, just in terms of like they're tracking just like your dimple quivering is now part of the game. Yeah. I don't know what that's going to add to the gameplay. I kind of want to see where that goes, especially because Bruce Straley is not involved in this anymore. He was the gameplay director of the last game.
Yeah, he's on sabbatical.
Yeah. So, and I mean,
it really is like Naughty Dog has managed to get every millimeter out of that hardware that they can. Like they like every game looks better and better. And like the fact that like Uncharted 3 and Uncharted 1 came out in the same system is insane. So like seeing what they can do on a PS4 from the ground up version of this is exciting.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like between them and Kojima, it's a race to see who can get the Bungus first.
That's true.
A fully realized mocap Bungus.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a pretty safe call right now that neither of the main characters in The Last of Us 2 will survive to the end. Or at least one will die.
There's a theory that Joel's dead. And yeah, that this is her dealing with that.
Yeah. If that's a spoiler, congratulations. This isn't a game yet, so we're just speculating.
And then the thing you mentioned that I yelled at you about, the costume. What she's wearing.
Oh, yeah. People are saying, like, at least in this, she's wearing something really similar to what Riley wears in Last of Us.
It's the same jean shirt and might even be hers, which is, like, really messed up. That's the other thing. I mean, she's dealing with the loss of the universe and loss of the first person she's ever been in love with and her family.
You don't wear your ex's clothes?
God, no. I don't know. None of my exes were ever killed by cauliflower people. Some of them should.
We also mentioned that this time around, the game is being co-written by someone who wrote Westworld.
One of the writers on this season, Westworld.
Yeah,
which is
really cool.
And I looked at like her other credits. Like she seems awesome. So that's really cool.
Somebody was tweeting at her being like, "This is your first video game? Uh-oh. Like what? Okay. You know, you realize, I think she'll be okay.
Yeah, she's a writer. You can just be a writer.
Yeah, you can just write.
Yeah.
Like it's not like she's working. If the controls are bad, it's not her fault.
Knack 2.
It's back. I played it for an hour.
Yeah.
All right.
Why not get some point there?
Wait, can we put an edit of a tumble? No. I'm actually excited about this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
The I'll go as fast as I can because it's Knack. Basically, the first game's a glorified tech demo. Yeah. I think, honestly, I don't think I finished it because it gets bizarrely hard toward the end because Knack can only take like 3 hits, so you're just dying constantly.
Yeah, it does.
This game fixed a lot of the complaints. Like, it's not nearly as linear. They actually have, if you pick easy as opposed to medium or hard, it literally physically is an easier path. And if you pick medium or hard, you can see what the easy path would be, like off to the distance, and instead you're just doing some more complicated platforming. You can switch on command whenever you want. You can get bigger, smaller. There's actually a pretty robust move set and a skill tree to upgrade every single move that you can get. And then with co-op, if I'm playing with you, like one of the abilities, like a multi-punch, if you're my co-op partner and I stand behind you while I do it, it actually becomes a machine gun where I'm taking the pieces of your neck and like firing them at other enemies.
That's cool.
Like they had all kinds. You can do a like body slam, like a ground pound kind of thing. If I do that on top of your character, you detonate, and it's like an area of effect attack. Like every attack single is kind of magnified if you do it with a co-op partner. So.
Did you get to play co-op at all?
I did. I played co-op with Mark Cerny, which is a really weird way to play this game because like every time I died, I could see him like... he definitely like... is very good at this game.
We're like, sorry, Mark Cerny, I didn't work on this game with you.
Exactly.
Sorry, Mark Cerny, I didn't create Marble Madness.
I was very nervous playing a video game with Mark Cerny because I'm like, oh man, he can definitely tell.
He's definitely
every...
judge me right now.
It's like, it's like he's in the Matrix and he can see like the source code of every screwed up jump.
I feel like you're hurting my voxels. How dare you?
I feel like he can do that just like in a Starbucks or something. That's a brilliant man.
Oh. But yeah, the game's like. It feels like a game, and I wrote a preview that you can read in IGN, but basically, like, I don't think they're going to reinvent the platformer. This isn't going to be like the be-all and end-all of that genre, but I do think it is just kind of what they probably set out to do the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like the first game was like a 6 out of 10, right? Yeah. And if this one's in a 7.5 or an 8, like I think that's a totally serviceable entry in the PlayStation's.
Yeah,
it's more like, of an actual platformer.
We've talked about this on the show too, but like there's a kind of a lack of good all ages games.
Yeah.
Like gamers are getting older and we're getting more and more stuff like, you know, like Last of Us 2, but like
I was about to say the 3 things we just mentioned, like you don't want to play with your like 4-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something like it is really nice because like you can warp to the other co-op partner whenever you want. So it's like, yeah, you really could like play with like your little brother or your kid or whatever.
Yeah. And I like with, you know, Ratchet and Clank earlier this year is one of the most gorgeous games on the console. Mm-hmm. I feel like this game running on a pro is going to be just as gorgeous.
Well, that's the thing. Like Mark Cerny used the original game as sort of a way to flex the muscles of the PS4. Yeah. And if you can do that with the pro, it like
that sounds
that's
awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I demoed the original Knack at E3 2013 and I said the same thing. I was like, oh, cool, a platformer, it's colorful, it'll be fun. And then when the game came out, it was more of a brawler than a platformer. It's kind of a slog.
I think they can learn from their mistakes. This could be AC2 to AC1.
Yep. I hope they get rid of all the scenes where you're running towards the camera and something's chasing you.
All the Crash Bandicoot nonsense.
I hate that in every video game. Yeah. That needs to never happen.
It had these cool like collectible rooms. There's 100 of them hidden throughout the world where you
have to... Are they randomized? No. Because they weren't. The collectibles were randomized in the first place. Yeah, I was just talking to Jared Petty about this before the show. About he wrote the guide and he hates that game because.
Well, that's
that.
What I'm saying. Like, literally every piece of feedback I've ever heard from anyone about this game, they seem to have tried to address.
Right.
So basically, they know people hated how linear it was. So now there's like that kind of option to do the linear path if you're playing on easy, but there is a more challenging route. And like for collectibles, there are now these 100 hidden rooms and you can only find them a small knack. And they're like actually pretty tough to spot. And you switch to small, there's like a little platforming area. You get to one and you open a box. And inside the box, you have like a collectible that you can then use to like, you have to collect three pieces to build a certain kind of gun or a certain kind of bomb or whatever yep. it is. And like, they're just smart about it. It's also like, you can see what your friends picked up if they've accessed the same room. So it'll show you like, oh, Marty took the bomb. And so I can be like, hey, Marty, did you like the bomb or should I go with this other thing?
That's cool.
I'm also talking about guns and bombs as though those are weapons and knacks. They're not.
It's pretty amazing that this was like a running joke amongst PlayStation fans since launch. And yeah. we sort of willed this into existence by repeating it so many times that now it's here. You know, it's like Candyman.
Yeah. No, I think like we make fun of it, but I think this will be a fine game.
Yep.
I think that
I hope so.
Order
really
1886 will be cool too. I mean, they might not be totally groundbreaking, but like remember the first Uncharted compared to Uncharted 2?
Yeah.
Seriously.
That game was the first song. The first one was fine, but it was also like
a hot beat, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're also getting Parappa the Rapper's 20th anniversary. I got to see this game running in HD because the demo was just put out. If you're curious, go check that out. It's on PSN. That game looks gorgeous,
yep.
all modernized.
Mm-hmm.
It still plays kind of remedially.
Yeah. It's kind of like an iOS game, revisiting it. And like obviously, at the time, that wasn't a thing. But like revisiting it is harder than I thought it would be. Like I only played a little bit, but I was less taken with it than I wanted to be.
I mean, I think that was one of the first rhythm games to come to the West.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, it was. Like, definitely.
And it sort of shows. Like, Sony did a great job, I thought, at the conference of paying homage to some of their forgotten classics.
Yeah.
We had Parappa, we had Wipeout, we had LocoRoco, we had Patapon, and then even like with the Crash remastered. It was sort of like, hey, you guys have stuck with us for the past 20 years. We're bringing back some of these things. Some of these things, like Crash, are complete remasters. Some of this is just sort of HD remakes. But I think with some of them, the age shows if they don't fix the gameplay. Like, I think with Crash and Parappa and even Wipeout especially, like, those three genres have grown so much in the last two decades and grown in positive ways. Like, they've been refined. Rhythm genres have become more complicated. The platformers, they've learned how to move in a 3D space. Whereas going back to those mechanics is a little bit like, ooh. Like,
And it's tough when you do a remaster, right? Because you're like, how much do you really want to mess with this? Like, you could go in and fine tune it and you can tweak it and you can change all these things. You can add additional levels and you can basically like George Lucas the hell out of it. Or you can just leave it as is and then preserve it for posterity for all of time. But I think like there's a tough balance there, right? Because I know that like a lot of these games, I like the idea of them existing. I like the idea of younger generations finding them.
Yeah.
I like the idea of being able to turn on my PS4 and being like, some of my favorite PlayStation 1 classics are here.
Yeah.
Will I actually play them for a long time? That's a different story.
Yeah.
I will say they were running on these like 70-inch Sony 4K TVs.
Oh, they were gorgeous.
And they're some of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on a PS4.
Yeah.
It's like stunning to see like Parappa the Rapper in 4K on a PS4 Pro. Mm-hmm. You're like, all of this power is being put behind this little puppet show.
Yeah, same thing with LocoRoco and Patapon, which I think those two are going to end up holding up better just because, I mean, obviously they're newer
than the other ones.
And those genres haven't really been pushed that far. Those games are still sort of singular in terms of what they do.
Yep.
Yeah, they only had Parappa and LocoRoco at PSX. I didn't see Patapon here.
Patapon was just the show.
LocoRoco is kind of like a 2D Katamari, isn't it?
A little bit,
Same devs?
Yeah, it's a little more platformy.
I just remember that was one of those ones. I think it was after I had a PSP, but like some guy at my art school had it, and it was like that had come out in the interim, and he was like playing it. I'm like, what happened? Like, I was playing like, you know, Vice City Stories on that.
Yeah.
Like, how did you?
It was kind of cool.
How did you get the drugs in there?
I think it was like when PlayStation was sort of like, hey, like we're not just like gritty, realistic racing games and mature fighting games and stuff like that. Like, we can be a little Nintendo, Sega, Taito, like classic Windsor. Arcade.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, there's still that now. I mean, like, this actually, in the modern game reminds me most of it's probably Hohokam, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, it feels
yes.
Like, there's it's really cool that like the legacy they set out back then, like even on PSP, but also especially on PS1 with games like Parappa, like they're these weird games that kind of set the tone for what PlayStation is.
And stuff like Sound Shapes.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I think that continues into today.
I think I really would love it if Parappa got some kind of a reboot, like bring it back, whatever.
What was like a gritty 8 Mile kind of
thing? I really want 8 Mile with Parappa. Yeah. Like just reenact that whole thing.
I was saying I wanted
bang Sonny Funny in the foundry where you work making mufflers or whatever.
I want it in the Bloodborne engine. Where he's just like a full adult man dog. Zach Ryan, who's one of our producers here at IGN that worked PSX with us, there was a Parappa the Rapper like costume guy walking the show floor who worked for Sony. And I got a picture with him, and so did Zach. And we were looking at our pictures afterwards, and Zach was like, "Did they make him like more of a dog?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I think he's becoming like less of a boy and more dog-like." And I'm like, "That's really odd. Like, I think like they're leaning into this new character design of him. I think if he does come back, because they have this full costume now, so I know what a 3D rendered Parappa the Rapper looks like, sort of. But this is a weird conversation. But I think he's becoming more of a dog.
It's like how they got rid of Fat Pikachu and Fat Sonic.
Yeah,
like, I want Fat Pikachu and Fat Sonic.
Yeah. I want Fat Parappa. Parappa.
I don't want Boy Parappa. I don't want Sexy Pikachu anymore.
Like Big Pun or Fat Joe?
Exactly. Yes, exactly like that. I just want Notorious retold with Parappa. He's like, yeah. God, yeah. No, I used to love this game. My whole thing with it was I remember seeing ads for it like right when the PlayStation first came out. Mm-hmm. And I'd be watching MTV and I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of like trying to get more into music and stuff. And like, you know, video games they're still cool. But like suddenly there's all these like, you know, older kid, big kid, sixth grader nonsense to pay attention to. And they were showing ads on MTV for Parappa. And it was like that and like, I don't know, Shenmue and God only knows what. But like, I remember just seeing the ads and being like, I don't know what this game is.
Yeah.
And somehow I took away that it was a game where you were making music videos with cartoon characters.
Oh.
Which, honestly, that's what the Spice Girls game was. That was also like a remedial rhythm game. Like it wasn't something that was unheard of at the
time. Did your friend have a Sega CD?
I don't think so.
Because that was like half the games in Sega CD,
right.
Crisscross music video.
Like, I think I'd heard about that. Yeah. Like, I heard that there were
video simulator.
Maybe I like asked somebody, and they were like, "That's what Parappa was about." And I was like, "Oh, okay, fine." And my friend got it, and then at that point, like, I didn't know the buttons. Like, I didn't play enough. Like, I still looked at the keyboard to type. You know, like it was just one of those things I hadn't developed that much. But I remember trying to play it and just be like, kick, 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 punch, punch, punch. And I'm like, I don't know how to play this game. I don't like it. So like now, even going back, I think I'd be better at it, but I still suck at any kind of rhythm related anything.
It's tough.
I love that universe though. Like Alana was asking, like, what's this game about? And I'm like, you're a dog and you're trying to score with this flower.
Yeah. And you gotta learn to drive, you gotta learn karate.
You gotta learn karate so you can fight bullies, but you gotta learn karate from an onion.
You also gotta take a dunk, but you gotta wait in line to take that dunk.
She thought I was lying at that point. I'm like, no, that's actually a thing. Yeah. Parappa the Rapper, wonderful lore in that universe. There's a note here, real quick. Edith Finch rules.
Yeah, I want to do a couple of really quick PSX things.
Who's that, your girlfriend?
Marty and I took Marty and I took a demo at PSX for what became of Edith
Finch. What remains of Edith Finch, which is Edith Finch. Giant Sparrow, who made The Unfinished Swan.
One of my favorite sort of indie games that come to PlayStation the last few years.
It's a first-person game. You're in this family's house. It's sort of a spooky house. Think on home. But the whole thing is, every time a member of the family dies, they rope off that room and sort of preserve it as is. And so you're going through like four or five generations and the family's cursed and so people keep dying. And you're exploring their rooms and then you get these short vignettes of how they died. And they're all surreal and it's dipping into magical realism.
It's got this sort of like haunted Winchester Mansion feel to it.
There's like secret passages.
But so we actually, like, I want to talk about this real quick because Ian Dallas. I'm sorry, forget his name. Creator of this game and creator of Unfinished Swan. Awesome, just down to earth, very honest guy. And we just had a very funny conversation with him, sort of about like what inspired this game. And he talked about one of the big inspirations for it was Saturday Night Live. He was like, well, yeah, like when you watch Saturday Night Live, like there's like 12 different sketches and they're all like 3 or 4 minutes long. They don't really overstay their welcome. And they're a bunch of short stories and they kind of culminate at the end with like a bunch of people hanging out, but they're really like all on their own, independent.
And he's like, and those things don't work on their own, like the It's Pat movie or the Ladies Man movie don't work, but as skits, they're fun.
So we made an SNL reference, and then I was talking about, I was like, well, I noticed there's a lot of like revolving doors and hidden traps and places and tunnels like that in your house, like, was Webster an inspiration for you? And he's like, actually, yeah, we were going with more of like a Webster and less of like an Anne Frank type of thing. And I was like, this is a great interview. Like, this is really fun.
Yeah, I totally wasn't expecting
it. But it's really cool. Like, you go into like you go into a room, right? And there's like two beds in there. And it's like twin boys used to live here. One of them died, and the other one kept
staying. Those double dudes where I come
double
from.
Double dudes. And one of them died because he was just like, he went out in the swing set in the backyard and was like, I'm going to do a full loop. And his brother's like, you can't. And he's like, well, just because you said I can, I'm going to try. And Marty locks in, sits down in the swing.
First person.
And he starts swinging. And you just see this kid going back and forth over this cliffside. And he goes, flips finally over it. And it's like 3 minutes long of just like, my hands were sweaty. It was intense. Yeah. And the thing flips over. And the boy flies out and dies. And that's the end of his story. And then you're like, okay.
Wow.
Bye. And then you crawl into the next room.
I saw this in the trailer they showed, and the first thing, I didn't recognize it. I've heard of this game, but I feel like it looked entirely different the last time I saw it.
Yeah, it looks a lot better than when I played it.
This looks like it's made for VR a little bit.
They actually did some experiments with that, but VR is pretty tough when it comes to like full 360 movement in a house. I think that the thing is with VR.
Like, I would have vomited if I played that swing set thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. I want virtual reality swing set, because if I go to the park and actually get on there as an adult man, I look like a real.
Yeah. I wonder if they could do like a abbreviated experience. Maybe. Like, you maybe see just one of the rooms.
Yeah.
Or four of
the problem with VR is that a lot of people they don't. It's really tough to make it for everybody, right? Like, if you make a version of a game that's like that has full 360 movement, somebody like me might be able to handle it because I play a lot of VR stuff. But somebody who's never played it before will get sick by it and then write the worst review ever.
Yeah.
So it's kind of tough. As is right now, like, I'd like to see some of it in VR. I wish they did like a VR section. I'd like to see these guys do a dedicated VR game. But on its own, I'm really impressed with this so far.
At the very least, I think that the vignette approach is really smart.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy to hear that someone's doing that and cares about that. Because
they said they're still trying to figure out the ending. And I suggested, why don't you just have everybody come out on stage and they play the saxophone music and they hug like the end of SNL.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to do that. Really quick, the other two things I liked were just Ukulele, which obviously I talked about a thousand times. We got to play it. It's big, colorful. It's fun. I can't wait. And then,
just like you.
Thanks, man.
We found a cool thing in Ukulele where there's arcade cabinets.
Yeah. There's a snake named Trouser.
There's a snake named Trouser Snake. And it's really gross.
Cabinet thing was
I know the way you're thinking, Max, but... tell me how you think this snake wears pants.
Is there one leg of the pant that he goes in?
No, it's actually not really a lowly worm situation. I was going to talk to you about this. This is one of the biggest scoops from PSX. His leg goes into one leg, or his body goes into one leg, and his tail comes back out the other. So underneath the pant legs, where like his legs would be, there's just like a loop.
So he's like a weird pipe?
He's like wearing jorts.
That's really, really strange.
Like the letter U, not like you wearing
jorts. Not you wearing jorts.
I don't wear jorts.
That's just sad.
Yeah. Old pictures. Man, that's very strange.
Yeah. What did you get to play?
I played Vane, which is it's by this company called Friend and Foe Games, which has actually an artist from The Last Guardian is the art director on it. And they have a bunch of people from Gorilla and PopCap and Avalanche and all these other big studios. But the section we played, you're playing as a bird and you're flying over the desert. And it was just
there's
super
an actual
beautiful.
Call button.
There's a call button. Yeah, I wrote
press
about
X
it.
Can you upgrade it to Scraw? Or?
We'll find out. I have a preview up with more details on it. But just basically, like, it's just a beautiful game and I want to know more. They were being so vague. The trailer shows all these sections where you're playing as a man and it seems you can transform into the bird back and forth. So curious to see more of that. I played Persona 5 in English, which there will be some thoughts this week about that and how that kind of translated to playing it.
I really loved your story about that, by the way, because you said you played through the entire game and you kind of like inserted your own narrative into a lot of it because you didn't know what was going on. And then you kind of realized the weight and kind of depth of a lot of the situation.
You put 80 hours backstory. In Japanese and then 20 minutes in English and you're like, oh, well, that's what that's about.
And it's like I'm writing about it now. I'm like halfway through. I'll post it this week. But it's like basically just been a really weird experience playing this game. It's like playing a game on mute. Like I keep relating it to Bioshock and how it's like the Andrew Ryan moment. If you didn't understand, would you kindly? But you can obviously still tell that he's been beaten to death.
Yeah.
It's situations like that.
So. It reminds me a lot of like when I was a kid, I got a lot of like hand-me-down action figures and stuff from like friends and neighbors and cousins and stuff. And like didn't know what universes they were from. So I just created stories for them.
Yeah,
and then you find out the real thing and you're like, oh, well, that's better than mine. Or, oh, man, that's stupid. Mine was way better.
And yeah, we'll just have, check out Jan. We'll have a bunch of follow-up PSX stuff. I want to give a shout-out to Rahul and Danny and Christian for giving me PSX cards. We actually got a full deck that Alana unboxed. So there will be an unboxing video of the full deck of collectible cards from PSX, which are just really cool. They have, like, very pretty art from all the big games there. And it follows up on what they did last year. It's actually cool because they're all numbered. So this is all, like, a recurring sequence.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was gonna say, that's really one of the coolest parts of PSX. It's something that I can't partake in because we're busy doing our other thing. But the fact that, like, fans can show up there and go to each booth and collect a different card, and then they're selling binders in the store this year. Like, it's just really cool. I love that aspect because I think it gets people playing stuff they would never try to begin with. So ostensibly,
it's a scavenger hunt.
Exactly.
It's gamifying an event. I mean, I think they do that a little bit with pins at PAX, but this feels a lot.
They actually did it with an app. There was like a sort of companion app to the show this year that plugged into your PSN account and gave you free themes and like access to giveaways by scanning your ID badge at certain places. Like they had things really cool.
That's neat.
It's like for the audience that loves trophies and stuff like that. I mean, like it's perfect.
That is the thing. Awesome. It's like PSX is a show for this audience. And if wherever it is next year, please, I hope it's not Anaheim. if you can make it, I was just coming because not only was it just incredible being able to see hundreds of people who came up and introduced themselves and said they were fans of the show, but it's just a place where it's like, oh, everyone in this room has the exact same interest. Like, we're all like broken in the exact same way and love the exact same thing.
And that was the last really quick thing I wanted to give a shout out to was just the Podcast Beyond Facebook group, the admins there organized awesome meet and greet that that Brian and I were able to go to on Friday night. And it was just really cool seeing everybody. I felt bad that we couldn't see every single person there, but like such a cool thing. Just in general, the Kind of Funny community had an awesome meet and greet there too. Like there were just so many, like it you're totally right. It felt so unified and it did feel like everybody was just together.
If you're in the Podcast Beyond Facebook group, which you should be, and you're like, man, this is a really good group. Like they run a tight ship over here. Thank the moderators in that group because they're phenomenal at what they do. They put together a great event for us at an arcade. We went and hung out for a few hours. They had prizes and giveaways and just genuine, warm, awesome people that make this job the best thing I could ever do. So thank you guys so much.
That is the opposite of reading crappy comments online. Yeah. Meeting people who care. And you know, thank everybody for being there. I'm bummed I couldn't be there. I was real salty about that.
We'll get you next time.
Yeah. Yep. Finally, it is time for What VR Playing, the number one Dracula virtual reality show.
So I've been playing a ton of stuff on PSVR at home that's come out in the last few weeks, and I'll have more details on that very soon. But I wanted to mostly focus on the stuff from PSX. Yeah, so this is more of a What VR going to be playing soon.
This one, first one I want to ask you about specifically. This was the game we saw very momentarily during the kind of sizzle reel of VR stuff. It had cowboys and dinosaurs, and you put the cowboys up with your little fingers, and you put them in the dinosaurs' backs, and they ride around together.
This is called Dino Frontier. It's made by Uber Games, the same guys that made Wayward Sky, which is one of my favorite games on PSVR. There wasn't, like, in general, I would say that it was sort of a quiet effort for PSVR in terms of PSX. I really wanted a lot more, like, oomph. I wanted to know what the next 6 months to a year are going to look like. We got some stuff like Resident Evil. We got some other stuff that has, like, you know, VR modes here and there. But I really wanted to get to figure out what the next big things are. But I think what PSVR fans need to keep understanding is that this is a system that you're going to get some really cool, interesting games every few weeks. You just have to know where to look. I don't think we're going to get big AAA games on this thing all the time. But if you start digging around a little bit, you'll find some cool stuff. I got to play Dino Frontier, which is awesome. It's basically a tabletop game / sort of town building simulator about this weird little like canyon frontier town full of cowboys and dinosaurs. And at first I was like, well, how do they interact? And then I started realizing one of the first things you have to do in the game is there's a triceratops and he's down and you kill him for meat. And I'm like, okay, well that's one thing you can do to the dinosaurs. You can also ride them and you can also fight them. Now, the cool thing about this is that you're using move controllers and you have these two big hands that can sort of like an iPad, like picture looking at a photo on iPad. You can kind of shrink it, scale it, stretch it, pinch to zoom. You can do that with this huge tabletop and it feels like there's all these little like toys running around on this table in front of you. Max, you're going to love this thing.
This honestly sounds like my perfect game.
And it's like so relaxed. It's so calm. It's not stressful. I talked to the devs about the game Tethered, which I also played recently, which I liked a lot, but a lot of that game relied on head tracking. This feels so much more tangible. And if you've ever seen Wayward Sky, you'll understand how well third person stuff like that works. So basically, micromanaging, I had to build like a little like hardware store. And then I had to build a place where they like build weapons and create like merchants and a place to store like goods and foods and stuff like that. Eventually, I took a bunch of guys. I trained them to ride raptors and I sent them in a battle against a T-Rex. And I could pick up one of the little cowboys. I could dangle him over a T-Rex's mouth, drop it in there and kill him. Or I could also pick up like one of the other guys and put him out into the world to start chopping down trees to bring back resources. So I'm like looking around this table and I have all these different guys doing all this little things for me. And my town is starting to build. And they sign it kind of fast forward and they're like, this is what your town's going to look like when it's like a little more fleshed out. And it's just like, it's like having a model train set in front of you. Yeah. Like all these different things are happening. It's all lit up. It's all beautiful. And I just love the humor, the art direction. It's all, it's just a very like warm feeling game. So keep this on your radar. It's called Dino Frontier. Probably, I would say mid late 2017. Yeah. It's a while out.
Yeah, a lot of
they kind of just started making this game. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of cool to get such a very small team. I think 7 people are working on it. So it was cool to sort of get an early crack of this thing and give it a shot. That's what PSX is all about.
Yeah. Real quick, did you have to leave?
3:32. Stick around. We're almost done.
Okay. I'll hang up. Real quick,
Marty, Psychonauts.
Psychonauts, Realms of Ruin. That is the sort of VR link between Psychonauts 1 and the upcoming Psychonauts 2. It is a first-person node-based adventure game, point-and-click adventure games. Node-based, but it make, like in Arkham VR, how you're not physically moving around the world, but you're sort of like, I'll go there, I'll go there. And it all makes sense because you're using your telekinesis and you're using your clairvoyance, so you're hopping into characters' eyes and viewing the world through there. Really smart, fun adventure game puzzles. The writing's great. All the actors are back. Psychonauts is one of my favorite 3D platformers of all time, and so the idea of coming back to these characters and then getting Psychonauts 2 all seems cool. And that's coming, I think, first half of 2017.
Yep. Cool. Finally, Starblood Arena, which is one of the big sort of exclusive new games they announced for PSVR. I was a little wary of it because I'm kind of like, I've played enough like sort of Eve slash Rigs.
It just looks like Rigs.
It just looks like another one of those
games,
right?
DreamWorks Avatar pilots.
Yeah. So then I tried it out, and I'm like, this is actually one of the most comfortable PSVR games I've played yet in terms of full 360 movement. Like, you look at the trailer for that thing and you're like, I'm gonna puke in my helmet. And I actually tried it out. They said that they spent a year working on head tracking for aiming in that game to make sure that, like, it's just incredibly comfortable. I jumped in and was just like speeding up, slowing down, full on deathmatch, like fighting a bunch of different enemies. They just kind of dropped me in a battle. It's gonna have like a pretty robust single player campaign where you can unlock stuff for the multiplayer mode. Just a cool game. Keep it on your radar, even if you're not really into first person stuff or space stuff. Like, I think it all comes together pretty well. And finally, quick shout out to the Resident Evil demo, which is available right now. They just patched it for VR. It's terrifying. It's so scary. I've played through this demo like 3 times already.
Yeah,
I found it pretty lackluster, honestly. Yeah. In VR, it's terrifying. Like, it gives you that sort of like alien isolation feeling of being like, something is like, I don't want to move, I don't want to breathe, it's going to hear me. And last but not least, Battlefront VR just launched today. It's free for anyone who has a base version of the game. You don't even need the season pass. That game's been going for like $7 recently. What's wrong?
He has to take a donkey.
I want to play Star Wars. VR.
I know.
Well, you should work at IGN.
You can go do that at work. I've played through the full demo at PSX. Shout out to John and the rest of the team at Criterion. They knocked it out the park with this thing. They got Alan Tudyk to actually record VO for K2SO. And he is sort of like, you're protecting this U-Wing ship throughout the entire thing. There's 2 different protagonists you can play as, a male or a female, and they recorded VO for each one. It's just this like really awesome, quick, like, it almost feels like Star Tours or something like that.
Nice.
Where like you start off, you can see the belly of an AT-AT, and then you get into the ship and you go off into space, you go through an asteroid field, and then you're in a space battle and you take down a Star Destroyer.
I'm so excited because we played this at Gamescom before a lot of that was in.
Yeah, they added a ton of stuff. The full version that I played a few days ago is actually like 20 something minutes long. And it, like the single player stuff that's in Battlefront already, the challenge based stuff, there's actually a bunch of like little criteria you can go in to like get a certain amount of kills or do certain things to unlock other stuff.
So it's playable.
Yeah. I think you'll be able to play as a U-Wing. I'm not even sure, but it looks like there's a lot of stuff in there. Last but not least, I clicked a button inside my X-Wing that pulled up my like Luke Skywalker A New Hope targeted computer that was just like hovering in front of me. It's so damn cool. Like, yeah, this thing's exactly what I want from VR, right? So, and it's free. Go get it. Check it out.
That is what you are going to
that is
VR
what VR
play.
Playing this week.
I get it.
What VR will be playing soon.
Cool. Well, that is our show for you today. This week, again, head over to the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond and check out our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/IGNBeyond.
Yeah. We also have, you and I are doing a Let's Play series called Welcome to Skyrim.
It is very, very stupid.
I've never played Skyrim.
And you still haven't because I've been hogging the controller because I'm a Skyrim expert.
I'm going to take it back. I'm going to break your fingers.
Don't do that. If you do, I'll eat a whole bunch of apples and cheese wheels and they'll heal up just fine.
That's
on the main IGN thing. You can just find a playlist for that. The thumbnails are all stupid and have pictures of Harry Potter and horses on them and stuff.
Yeah, the big two. And then I also, Alana and I just started a series where we're playing through Mass Effect because I also haven't played Mass Effect.
Yeah, and
I
somehow
I don't know
here.
How I got a job.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hoodwinked a bunch of people.
I've never played Minecraft either. Maybe we could do one of those.
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay.
Yeah,
so wait, I've never played Mario.
I love this. Is all that, like, you're basically getting paid for on the job training for stuff that you should have known before you got here.
Yeah.
Hoodwinker.
Yeah, you can find us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Marty's McBiggity with two G's and two T's. Brian is Agent Bizzle. And Goldfarb, you are Garfep. And that is our show. Thank you for listening or watching or whatever. And have a good one. And don't forget to...
brush your teeth.
There we go.
That's important.
Brush your teeth.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Grundles.
Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.